Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
It can be very overwhelming to go into a big museum like the Pro Football Hall of Fame and not know what to look at first. There is so much eye stimulation, it's really difficult. But don't fret if you're planning on visiting here soon. Our next guest will tell you what to look for and some of the greatest attractions you might not want to miss. Coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another edition where we get to have a guest that has some association with football and hear his story. And we've really got a good one for you tonight. We've got a young man from the Kansas area, originally from Kansas City. His name is Andrew Stockman. Andrew, welcome to the Pigpen.
Thanks for having me, Darren. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we are excited too. And I left out the important details, and I'm going to let you share with us a little bit about your background and your football fandom and your connections to the game of football.
Yeah, I grew up in Liberty, Missouri, right outside of Kansas City, and was more of a baseball family. Grew up going to Royals games, but also loved the Chiefs as well, right from the beginning. And so I found a picture recently where I was probably 1.5 in a Chiefs shirt, I think red pants, and I was like propped up next to a Chiefs toy helmet. So my mom had like curated that photo shoot for me when I was a toddler. So like right away, I was a big sports fan, inherited that from my dad, and grew up playing baseball primarily. I didn't play football, but grew up with like Trent Green, Priest Holmes, Tony Gonzalez, like those are the first Chiefs teams I really remember. And then that turned into, let's see, like Derek Johnson, Tom Bahaly. There were some lean years, though. There were a couple years probably where Dustin Colquitt, the punter, was the best player before Jamal Charles really took off. But that was a really interesting time because neither the Royals or Chiefs were any good. And so they really kind of reached the low point around 2012. And then right before or right after that, Andy Reid was hired, and now the tides have changed. But I've told people I was a fan before Patrick Mahomes, before Andy Reid. I go back to the Trent Green days when they had a good offense, but their defense wasn't all that good. So that was a little bit about my kind of Chiefs fandom history. But then I grew up in Liberty and then went to college at Wichita State in Wichita, Kansas, studied sport management, but didn't really know what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like general manager of the Royals, my hometown team, but there's only one of those positions. And I was introduced to the International Sports Heritage Association in my undergrad career. They had a conference in Wichita at the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame. And so the first person I met at the conference was the director of the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, Dana Hart. And so she was very kind to me and kind of showed me around and introduced me to all these people, folks from like the Patriots Hall of Fame and the Packers Hall of Fame. And I was in my element. I was a big sports fan, big history fan. We grew up going to primarily baseball stadiums, but we would see the football stadiums as well on these vacations, and just grew up a big sports and museum family. And that had never occurred to me as a career opportunity until that conference in 2019. And from there, I finished my sport management degree and then did not do anything with sports. I worked for a men's fraternity for 2 years on their staff, working with different chapters across the country, learned a lot of great skills, met a lot of great people there. But then I started a podcast in 2021, which is how, in kind of a roundabout way, I was connected to Darren and the Sports History Network. So, I created Hallowed Ground, the Sports Museum podcast, which I didn't have any intention of pursuing sports heritage as a career at that time, but I was kind of bored during COVID and looking for something else to do. And I loved listening to podcasts for 4 or 5 years by that point, and then really had some downtime, and I was like, well, I can make my own. I can try figuring this out, and using some of the connections with the Isha organization and just cold emailing people, you get to meet interesting people and talk to them. And I'm sure you've experienced that, Darren, with this podcast. So I've had that for
Very,
almost
very,
3 years
very
now.
familiar story here.
Yeah. So it's been a lot of fun. Talked to a lot of football folks that I wouldn't have met otherwise, and really people from all sports, all types of museums, ones I've heard of and ones I hadn't heard of before. So it's been great to highlight different ones. And then about fall of 2021, I had a thought to maybe pursue sports heritage as a career, and that brought me to my current status as a graduate student at the University of Kansas in their Museum Studies program. So I'll graduate in May 2024 with a degree in Museum Studies. And I'm working on the at the on-campus art museum, the Spencer Museum of Art, and that's kind of my like consistent grad school job. But then we have to have an internship in addition to our studies. And my internship this past summer, in the summer of 2023, was at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. So I've been all over the place. I got to travel a lot for the fraternity job I had. I was up in Ohio the whole summer. I had a baseball internship in 2020, right during COVID. So I've done a bunch of different things that have kind of brought me to where I'm at now, about to graduate and hopefully going to pursue a career in the sports heritage industry. And all that really means is like sports museums, halls of fame, like team historian roles. It's kind of a really neat field, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, well, first of all, congratulations. You're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel after this long educational journey, and
Yeah.
congratulations to you. And that's a great internship. Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's you they put you up on the peak of the mountain there of probably sports museums. So that's a cool thing. So get the nothing's going to surprise you probably too much when on your future journeys here. So that's cool. Let's talk a little bit about your Hallowed Ground. That's a very interesting podcast. And you said there were some that were some surprises. What's maybe one or two of the big surprises of sports museums that you came across?
Yeah, that's a good question, Darren. I know this is more of a football podcast, but I'll go off into baseball a little bit if that's
That's
okay,
okay.
because
Yeah.
I'm a big baseball fan, grew up loving the Royals, got to go to more of those games than I did Chiefs games, although I've been to a few. And there were some baseball museums that I had never heard of before. I was just, as I was starting out, looking through it, the internet, and just kind of finding different sports museums, or like one museum would lead me to another. And I found the Baseball Heritage Museum in Cleveland, and it's at the site of Old League Park, which I think may have hosted some football games back in the day, now that I think about it. But historic League Park, and it's like in the old ticket office of the former Cleveland Indians stadium. Now they're the Guardians and play at Progressive Field, but it was this baseball museum I never heard of. And so I reached out to their director, Ricardo Rodriguez is his name, and he was actually my very first episode of the podcast, which released on March 1st, 2021. So it be kind of became full circle, where I was only an hour away from Cleveland this summer when I was in Canton. And so I drove up there and had emailed Ricardo, and I actually got to meet him and visit the museum on a weekend when I was up in Canton for my internship. So that was one. And then there was the BRS Baseball Museum in Nokomis, Illinois, very small town, kind of central Illinois. There's this 60-mile radius where they have three baseball Hall of Famers from that little area. And they all played probably 80 to 100 years ago. And so this little museum has kind of sprung up to honor those citizens of that community. Jim Bonomly, Red Ruffing, and Ray Schalk, kind of obscure to modern fans, but they're really well preserved at this small baseball museum in Nokomis, Illinois. So even as big of a baseball guy as I am, those were two museums that I'd never heard of. And now I've made connections with those museums and got to share their stories with my audience. So those were just a couple surprises along the way.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, I'm only an hour and a half from Cleveland, and I mean, that's the first I've ever heard of this thing. Usually when you think about museums in Cleveland, you got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you have the Christmas Story Museum, the house that was modeled after the movie. And but yeah, that's one I haven't heard of. I'm gonna have to check that out here one of these days. So yeah, good deal. Good deal. So what along the football lines, what kind of museums football wise have you come across besides, we know the Pro Football Hall of Fame, of course, I'm sure, but
Yes,
what
I'll
else do you
have a
have?
few upcoming episodes with some colleagues I worked with this summer. But then I think my first episode was Ricardo, and then I think my second one was with the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame. I had met Justine Kampfer there, one of their staff members at the ISHA conference in 2019, and had gotten plugged in with some of the stuff that she was doing. And she talked to me for the podcast. And then their curator, Brent Hensel, I had him on later in 2021. So talked to a couple of those folks. And if people want to check out those episodes, they can just search Hallowed Ground on any podcast app and find it. But also talked to the New England Patriots, their Hall of Fame, Minnesota Vikings. Some pretty team specific ones. And so that was really good connections to have, and just kind of people I was familiar with in the NFL, even before going up to the Canton for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I've done a few others too, but it's been a really interesting experience to have some of these big, like nationally known teams like the Packers and the Patriots, and then kind of have, like, I've talked to the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame and like really kind of smaller baseball museums, like I said. So it's really ran the gamut on the types and sizes and sports and different types of people. And it's been really neat to do that. But I've gotten plugged in with some really nice and really good people from the football organizations as well, from their halls of fame.
It's amazing to me, and I guess I've been naive for most of my life until about 3 years ago. I really only thought the two there was only two football museums. I thought it was the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which is only an hour and a half from me, and the College Football Hall of Fame, which used to be in South Bend, and my brother lives in Chicago, so it's right off was right off of 90. You could see the Golden Dome, from up there, but and then they now since moved to Atlanta. I thought those were the only two, and I've come across handfuls of them, like the Bear Bryant Museum down in Alabama, and some of these they just blow my mind, all these little ones that pop up. And this past year I came across and it's not really a football museum, but I got to visit. We had a PFRA mini convention up in, I attend up in Western New York, which is not far from me. In Springville, New York, it's the home of Pop Warner, and they had a small little section of their local museum on Pop Warner, which was kind of cool to see and say, hey, yeah, Pop Warner was here. That's kind of neat. But yeah, that's amazing how many little museums there are. And I'm sure baseball is probably a lot more than there are football even.
Yeah, and you reminded me, I talked to Jeremy Swick, who used to be on staff at the College Football Hall of Fame. I've talked to him a couple times for the podcast, and then I've met a few folks from the Bear Bryant Museum through the Sports Heritage organization I'm part of. So I do need to have them on the podcast and maybe visit Tuscaloosa. And I thought of them recently once Nick Saban retired. I was like, I wonder how they'll kind of honor him down there. But yeah, definitely. I do think baseball lends itself more to some like smaller regional museums just because that's kind of the nature, especially the history of baseball. But football can definitely do that too. And I hadn't heard of that Pop Warner exhibit before. That sounds really neat.
Yeah, it's just a little corner of an old house, basically is what it is. But it's kind of neat to go back that over 100 years and look at a museum. And Jeremy Swick was a guest on ours, probably about a year and a half ago or so. We talked quite a bit about with the College Football Hall of Fame. He's still down at time. So yeah, he very interesting fella. He is. That's very cool. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You spent a summer there. I've been there multiple times. I went the year after COVID. It was the last time I was down there. Actually, I got to go down there twice. I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and I had the opportunity to go down on a media pass that year when they had the 2020 and 2021 combined that weekend. the Steelers played the Cowboys in the Hall of Fame game. It was, there's five Steelers going into the hall that weekend. I'm like, it's like there's no NFL fan ever that can go to the Hall of Fame and see five of their people associated with their organization and watch their team play and, spend a weekend there. So I said, it's a dream come true. This will never happen again. It was weird, but, but it was, I couldn't believe how much that place has changed in like just 10 years, from like the early 2010s. I remember when I was a kid, it changed even more. But had you ever gone to the Pro Football Hall of Fame prior to this year?
Yeah, we went as a family on a road trip up to Ohio in 2018 that summer. We went to Ohio State so my brother could tour that campus, and then we went to baseball games in Cleveland and Cincinnati, and then I think on our way to or from Cleveland, we stopped by Canton and spent an afternoon at the Hall of Fame, and it was really cool, and it was obviously like a bucket list item for us as a sports family on vacation, and so we really enjoyed it then, and then that made it an extra special experience to go back as an intern and work there for a summer.
Yeah, I think in 2021, my first time going there, they had the PFRA biannual convention there first. I was there twice that summer, and I think the first time I went there, I had never the new entrance. I mean, when I last time I was there before, you went in underneath the rotunda of the football shaped thing, the famous money shot of Pro Football Hall of Fame, and now you're quite a ways away from going into it now, but it's really cool how you go in there and the first thing you see is, a small display, but you see the Hupmobile in the background. You're like, oh boy, this is cool. So that was pretty astounding to me. What is your favorite area of the Pro Football Hall of Fame? What is one that you go to work each day and you say, I just got to walk by. I just got to see this again.
Yeah, I would say it would be the bust gallery. They like that's the Hall of Fame part of the museum, I think. There's so much at the Hall of Fame and so many different galleries, but it all like builds up to enshrinement each August, as you saw when all the Steelers folks were inducted. But I think John, they had a video playing outside the bus gallery always. And John Madden, in his enshrinement speech, talked about like he had always believed that the bust all talked to each other at night and like just kind of imagining that. And now John Madden being part of that as a Hall of Famer and kind of thinking about what they would say, what they would talk about, and getting to kind of walk through that. And we had like a staff professional development thing where we got to do some team building. And part of it was, a scavenger hunt, and so it was throughout the entire museum. But then in the bus gallery, we had to like count the number of busts that had glasses or had like bow ties, and like that was really kind of a fun thing to like go through and count who had glasses and how many there were. And not only that, but just understanding the history, understanding like the craftsmanship of the busts themselves is like artwork and how they really depict the Hall of Famers' likeness. And I don't know, just that's how they honor the greatest of the game. And so that was a really good experience just to walk by most every day.
Yeah, I thought what they did with that gallery, because when I was a kid, many moons ago, I can remember going there, and this is probably in the early 70s, so it wasn't that old, maybe 10, 12 years old then. The museum itself was, and but I can remember the busts were sort of like behind the ropes. You were kind of a 5, 6 feet away, and you could see them, but you couldn't touch them. You couldn't get up close to them. I just think it's so cool now how you can walk in there and, you want to put your head next to, George Halas. You can put your head next to George Halas and take a picture or whatever. And they make it so personable and a great experience for anybody to do. And they're just walking through there and seeing all these, bronze heads staring at you is kind of cool too, and kind of spooky maybe at night. But I don't know if that's experience. Maybe you have.
The lights are dimmed all the time, really. It's kind of a reverential space, and it was really cool to just be there at different hours of the day and see different people engaging with their favorite players and contributors. And when my family came around the 4th of July, I got to show them around the Hall of Fame, and we got to see all the Chiefs players, and then like Lamar Hunt and Hank Stram from the contributor side. And it was really cool how like each generation of football fan like resonates with different people, whether it's a more modern day player that's been enshrined recently or somebody that like somebody's grandfather remembers from like the 50s. Like that's what I love about sports is how they can connect different generations, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame definitely does that in a great way.
Yeah, they absolutely do. The Hall of Fame weekend is just an amazing experience. And folks, if you ever get an opportunity to do it, you got to do it. And it's like a giant, basically pro football carnival, I guess, is the atmosphere. Not only do you have the Pro Football Hall of Fame going on in the gigantic gift shop the way it is just normal on a normal day, it's a superstore of memorabilia and anything you want. And you have your favorite team or favorite player or whatever, but they have those gigantic tents set up, basically everywhere outside of the Hall of Fame, and it's tons of things. You can spend a lot of money there in a weekend. That's for sure. And tents where they have some, legends signing some autographs and things like that, which is kind of cool. And when the players come and they have a make big fanfare, like their limo or whatever pulls up and big crowd around them, and they escort them into the hall. It's just a great experience. It's really cool for a football fan of all ages, and I highly recommend it to anybody that gets a chance to do it.
Yeah, it's crossed my mind to go back 10, 20 years when like Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and Kelsey, like maybe go up there and go for an enshrinement for a player that I watched their whole career, and that would be a really special trip. But yeah, definitely highly recommend enshrinement weekend. It's a really special time. You got the Hall of Fame game Thursday night, and then it all kind of builds up to enshrinement on the weekend, and just a really, really special place.
Yeah, and the Tom Benson Stadium, I mean, what had you ever gone into the Fawcett Stadium prior to?
No.
I went in there. I didn't go into it for a game or anything. This is just one of my tours. They said, "Oh, you can come out here to the Fawcett Stadium." It was a nice stadium. It was a high school stadium, and I never realized why it was a high school stadium. I didn't realize on the other side of it was Canton McKinley until that Hall of Fame weekend. I went there because they had all the media. They had us over in the school, which was kind of cool. But Tom Benson Stadium, oh my gosh, that's like a mini NFL stadium. It's the press box that we sat in. It was like granite or marble top tables. It was beautiful, and the whole thing, 8 floors. You had to take an elevator to 8th floor to get up to the top of the stadium. I'm like, wow, this is like real deal here. It's a really nice little venue for games.
Yeah, it's a great venue for the Hall of Fame game, and then the Hall of Fame Village, they do a lot of like concerts, and the USFL was there over the summer when I was, so we went to a couple games, and just using that as a great venue space in addition to a high school field as it's been forever. It's a really nice stadium.
Yeah, I think Camp McKinley got a pretty good deal there. And you look out, and their practice fields, well, they got like 5 or 6 other football fields on the other side of the school. I believe the NFL put in it just say, hey, thanks for sharing your space with us or whatever. So it's a really nice little setup, for what they have. A great area. Now, did you get a chance to go down to the parade on Hall of Fame weekend, down through downtown Canton? They
I
have the
was there like working as part of the photo op. Like we helped like manage the crowd for the parade. I didn't get to see the parade, but definitely saw pictures and definitely saw people in all sorts of jerseys, even just for the photo op that I think maybe either kicks off the parade or is a different part of the weekend. But all the jerseys from different teams, some not even representing any Hall of Famers. They're just like football fans that came for the weekend. And but obviously, like Joe Thomas being inducted as an enshrinee this past summer, a lot of Cleveland folks made the drive, a lot of Miami folks for Zach Thomas, and then people from all over. Cowboys had a couple, the Broncos had DeMarcus Ware represented as well. So, really, all the teams were represented. I should have counted like how many jerseys I saw from the different teams because I probably would have seen all of them.
The year I went, it was a lot of black and gold, that's for sure. And you had Cowher and Polamalu and oh God, who I think who else went in that year? Fanica. Yeah, you had some of the front office people. It was just an amazing experience. But so now you have some other museums that you've visited though. What are some of the other ones that you've visited that and maybe some of the cool stuff that's in some of those?
Yeah, I have made a list of the museums I've been to that I've also talked to for the podcast, and I've been to like almost half of them, I think, and I have over 35 episodes. So I've been surprised at like how many museums I've been to. And being a museum studies student now, you're kind of always like looking for things and looking how things are arranged and how they kind of guide you through as a visitor. But I would say my favorite museum is the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City. That's my kind of hometown, and it's really important history that is preserved there. And I'm excited they've gotten more recognition and more funding, and they're going to expand into like a Negro Leagues campus these next few years. And I just took some friends there a couple Saturdays ago, and they really weren't big sports people, but they were able to appreciate the history and really get a sense of the Negro Leagues. And they do a great job of kind of illustrating the segregation, because when you go in through these old-timey turnstiles, like we're at baseball football stadiums forever, you go through the turnstiles to enter the exhibit space, and then you see this baseball field with statues for each of the nine players, kind of representing the top players in the Negro Leagues. Because that museum's not really a Hall of Fame, but it's kind of a holistic museum honoring the entirety of the leagues. But they have some legends like Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige out there. But you can't access the field until you learn all the history by walking around what would be the outfield. And so that field is also separated by what looks like chicken wire. And so that's illustrative of like how fans used to be separated. Black fans and white fans were separated by chicken wire. And so that's the story that their president, Bob Kendrick, has shared on some of their kind of storytelling, social media posts. And it's just really powerful. And the video is narrated by James Earl Jones. And so you get his voice kind of booming in their theater. And it's a really cool place. So if people want to come to Kansas City for a Chiefs game, for a Royals game, for some barbecue, definitely recommend the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. But there's so many other good ones. I've been to Baseball Hall of Fame, Basketball Hall of Fame. I've been to the Packers Hall of Fame. They do a really great job from a team perspective. They have a lot of space. They're very fortunate to have that in Lambeau Field. And that's where the 2022 Sports Heritage Association Conference was in Green Bay. And so we met for the conference part, like on the club level in one of the meeting rooms. And then one of like the banquets, or one of kind of the evening events, was you got to walk through the Hall of Fame and have some hors d'oeuvres. And it's just a really cool space. They have a replica of Vince Lombardi office. They have all sorts of Packers uniforms up on the wall, the different types, going back to the early days back in the 1920s. And that was really cool to see, because I'm not a big Packers fan. I appreciate their history, and they're probably one of the NFC teams that I cheer for the most. But just really being an appreciator of the history. I did find some of their Super Bowl I items pretty interesting, because that's what my Chiefs were in, and they lost to the Packers pretty bad in Super Bowl I. So the old programs and tickets and memorabilia related to that was really neat to see too.
Yeah, definitely pretty cool. I know I didn't wasn't able to attend, but they had a PFRA convention. I think it was 2016, or yeah, it must have been 2016. I wasn't really into PFRA at that point, but the guys talk about it. They just rave about going through that through Lambeau Field and the museum and some of the other attractions thereabouts around. So, a great place to visit, sure. So. Your Kansas City Chiefs, they're the reigning world champions. You've talked about some of their stars, Mahomes and Kelce and Andy Reid, and some of the great players have been with that organization the last few years. Now, that's and you came in. I mean, you were. I mean, Joe Montana was long gone from the Chiefs when you came on, I'm assuming. And you told us, Trent Green was the quarterback, so I follow that timeline a little bit. So what are some of the moments that besides, you're like me. I mean, I'm born and raised in Western Pennsylvania, so you have Steelers in your blood. I grew up at the time as, I was a 6-year-old when the Steelers won their first Super Bowl. So I was, I was brought into it, and not only by, my dad saying, "Hey, this is what you're a fan of," but it just was magnetizing and attractive to do that. So what were some of those moments that maybe some of the players or some of the plays that really are memorable to you as a Chiefs fan that really got you going, and now you get to see the fruits of what's being championship football is.
Are you talking about my lifetime or like things I'd heard about
Your
previously?
lifetime, your what
My lifetime?
your things that
Sure.
you watched on TV or experienced in person, or
Yeah.
things that the memories that stick with you.
I wish I remembered more of this, but I need to check and make sure. But I think I was at Mahomes' first preseason game. I've been to 2 regular season Chiefs games and then 2 preseason games, and I think we went to one in August 2017, like right after he was drafted, and I think they played the Titans, and it was just a preseason game. The stands weren't full, I don't think, and it was just kind of a warm summer night at a football game, and Mahomes was this first round pick, the first round quarterback they'd taken in almost 35 years, I guess. I think it had been since 1983, and so I don't know if anybody really knew what he would become, but I wish I remembered more about that game. But the playoff game against the Texans, where Nile Davis took the opening kickoff back in the 2015 playoffs, I think that stands out because the Chiefs had been bad most of my childhood. They had made the playoffs with Trent Green. They had made it with Matt Cassel a couple times, I think, but there were some lean years in between then, and we hadn't won a game since 1993. Way before I came around and was able to remember the Chiefs. And so that was the game that really kind of turned the tide. And with Alex Smith at quarterback, they were very good. Offense had a great defense with different star players. And that was kind of the tide where things have changed. And then the 2 Super Bowl wins have been really, really memorable. I got to watch the Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl with some friends down in Wichita during college. We had a Super Bowl party there, which was really fun. And then it was really meaningful to watch this last year's Chiefs Eagles Super Bowl with my dad and my mom and my brother and my roommates from college, who they've probably watched more Chiefs games than they wanted to because one is a huge football fan. He's a fan of the Browns because that's where his family's from. But we've gotten more of him into football. And then my other roommate's a Patriots fan. So they've had some, big time games with the Chiefs over the last few years. So it was fun for them to kind of come and hang out at my parents' house and watch the Super Bowl with us there and celebrate with us, even if they may not have been Chiefs fans. We converted them by the end of the night. So it was just a really fun, obviously, championship to celebrate. But then, like, remembering that it didn't always used to be like this with the Chiefs and just kind of remembering that history, even in my own lifetime, where they could sometimes get over the hump and make the playoffs, but never make it to the AFC Championship, let alone the Super Bowl. So those are just a few things that stick out.
Yeah, I think if I think of this recent Chiefs team, of course, the 13-second game against Buffalo in the playoffs, that had to be, I think that might be the most fantastic football game I've ever watched. I watched it from home, but man, it's, I don't know how many times I sat there and said, oh, well, this team went, oh, no, Buffalo went, oh, no, Kansas City went. It was amazing. I had no vested interest in it. We're only 100 miles from Buffalo, but I'm not a Bills fan. But it was just so much fun as a fan to watch that and watch these two quarterbacks and these offenses and these coaches with their strategies just going at each other and attacking these defenses with such vigor and only a few seconds going off the clock each time. It was amazing. I think that's right up there. But one of my favorites is a game where it must have been like 2019, maybe. Jared Goff was still with the Rams, and it was I think it
Oh,
was a
yeah.
Monday night game or it was a Thursday
Yep.
night game,
Monday night.
and they went at it, and it was some highfalutin score. It was like I think both teams were in the 40s or maybe even 50s. But what a game that was! So if you like offensive football, that might be like the cat's meow right there. That was
Yeah.
an exciting game.
Yeah, that was back and forth. And I remember watching that after a fraternity chapter meeting. I remember being kind of upset that I had to miss the start of the game, and then when we got back home, were probably about halftime by that point, and so it was just back and forth and high scoring, and the defenses were making plays too, even though it was such a high scoring game, which was kind of weird. I think there were a couple turnovers or defensive touchdowns as well for folks that lean more to the defensive side. But you bringing up the 13 seconds game, that was one of the most exciting football games I'd ever seen, probably the most, I would say, especially because it was my own team that was involved and got the victory in the end. But my favorite memory of that involves my grandma, who, growing up, my mom wasn't much of a sports fan. She married my dad 30 years ago now and kind of has become a sports fan. And she knows more than she lets on about football. Joe Montana and Marcus Allen were her favorites back in the day. But growing up with my grandma and my grandpa, they didn't really watch sports, maybe auto racing, but not much beyond that. But since the Chiefs have gotten good, and especially with Mahomes these last few years, my grandma is now 81 and she's become a really diehard Chiefs fan. And she watches each game by herself and is annoyed if anybody comes and talks to her, calls her during the game. She wants to watch and focus. And so,
She's hooked now. She's like the rest of us.
yes. And so I called her once the schedule came out and I told her each game and when it would be on TV and what channel so she could watch them. And I remember the 13 seconds game. I think that was probably the first season that she watched like every game pretty religiously. And I remember because it was back and forth and there were so many touchdowns, even in the last 2 minutes, she called our house and I was back home with my dad and brother watching the game because I hadn't started grad school yet. And she called us like with 2 minutes left and she was all worried that the Bills had taken over and the game was kind of over by that point. And we were like, well, hang on a little bit. We've got Mahomes. We've got some time. He doesn't need that much time. And so it ended up being 13 seconds that got him down for the tying field goal. And so that memory sticks out. And I have kept up with her. And I call her pretty much after every Chiefs game. And we talk about it. And we talk about how they were struggling at the beginning of the season. And now they've kind of poured it on at the end and really gotten a lot better as the playoffs have come around. So that's my favorite thing. We bought her some Chiefs shirts. She's really become quite a fan in her 80s, which is really special for us and just a really fun kind of addition to our family. So that made me think of the 13 seconds game and my grandma.
Yeah, I'll bet you that would be a really special game to watch and enjoy with your grandmother. Now, you just recently they had the NFL draft in Kansas City. Was it this past year or was it the year before? I lose
Yeah, in
track of
April
these
this
things.
past year.
Yeah, and that looked like, I mean, there was a lot of people there from at least for the video footage that they showed of it that weekend. Did you get to experience that?
I didn't. I wish I did. I was like wrapping up the semester for school and I couldn't make it, but my brother went with his girlfriend and they were just in a mass of people. And I don't know if they actually made it down to where the draft area was, but they had like a fan fest area that was around the whole Liberty Memorial, Union Station, World War One Museum area, which is a huge area. That's where the championship parades have been. And so it's a beautiful venue when it's not NFL draft season. And so the NFL kind of came in and took over that whole area and turned it into a fan fest. And I was kind of jealous that I didn't get to go and experience that in my hometown, but it really worked out. We got Rashee Rice, we got Chamari Connor's been a contributor on defense. George Karlaftis was last year, but we added Felix Anduke from K-State, a local kid. So that was a big draft for the Chiefs anyway. And then to have it in KC and kind of showcase the city to the nation was really cool.
Yeah, most definitely. Now I'm sure when you're at Wichita State, you got to see a few games. Who are some of the big players that went through at the college level you got to watch?
Yeah, it's interesting that Wichita State doesn't have a football team. They,
Oh, they don't. Okay.
no, and it's a kind of an interesting story. They had one up until 1986, but in 1970, I believe, the team was flying, I think, to Colorado for a game or something, and they had a plane crash in the mountains of Colorado. And I want to say like half the team and some athletics personnel passed away and kind of obviously was very tragic and put a damper on the season and kind of the program as a whole. And people think that it kind of they just kind of dissolved the program after that, but that's not true. They continued the program until 1986, and I think just like budgets and recruitment was lagging behind, and the stadium is still there. It's used for track now, but I don't know if that was ever really a totally viable program. Although I think Bill Parcells went to Wichita State, which is one of my favorite trivia nuggets, and it was an interesting time because as a big sports fan like I am, I was kind of expecting the college football atmosphere, and I didn't experience that in my undergrad days. So I didn't miss it as much as I thought I would because we had basketball, our softball program was excellent, went to a lot of baseball games, but football I didn't get to experience until I came to Kansas. And then that was also weird because Kansas football has been terrible for the last 15 years until Lance Leipold got here, kind of turned the program around in year one, and then last year made it to a bowl game, which I got to go to with my dad in Memphis, which was a really fun trip. And then this year they beat Oklahoma. We went to several games, my roommates and friends and I, and then had a winning season, including a bowl game win. So they've torn down half of the stadium now since the season ended, and they're kind of building up a whole gateway district for the football team. And they're kind of making up for what I didn't get to experience in college in my undergrad days. So, yeah.
Okay, so looking at it from a Kansas aspect, but now what are the some of the feelings maybe that folks are looking at down there with these new like mega super conferences that are going to be initiated next year and the playoff expansion and that what are some of the feelings about that, your personal feelings and some that you're hearing down in your area?
Yeah, it's interesting to think about because I think the expanded playoff is going to help conferences like the Big 12, which is a pretty big time football conference and always has been, but they're losing Texas, they're losing Oklahoma to the SEC. But then they've also gained like BYU's decent every year, Houston's okay. Like these other schools that are coming in can kind of build up the depth of
Yeah,
the
but you got
conference.
Arizona State.
Yep, they're coming in from the West Coast
Did
too.
you get another Pac-10 team too, or
It's honestly hard to keep track of at
yeah, I know
times.
I can't. I lost
Yeah.
track myself.
But yes, you're right. Those, I think Arizona State, for sure. I'm not sure if Arizona is or
I
not.
think
They may
both
be ranked in
Arizona
wins.
schools went in, but
So,
I wasn't sure who else went in.
yeah.
I
And
know like
so,
was it Washington State and Oregon State are sort of on the
yeah.
fence and I'm not sure where they were going or if they're going anywhere. They might be the pack two, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to keep track of like how all that shook out and where everybody ended up. But I think KU's pretty staunchly in the Big 12, from my understanding. And that mostly has to do with basketball, I think. Big 12 is an excellent basketball conference. I still think it gets kind of underrated nationally, but the Big 12 tournament's in Kansas City every year and really good depth throughout the conference from a basketball perspective. And so I think they have a new commissioner coming in that has been in for about a year or two. And he's really tried to preserve that while also building up kind of the national level of Big 12 sports in general. And that includes football. They have really excellent programs. Oklahoma State's always good. K-State's always good. KU is now a player in the Big 12. And so that doesn't even include like the Texas schools, like Texas Tech and Baylor. And all of them have had really runs of varying success these last 10, 12 years. Even with Texas and Oklahoma in still in the conference and still doing well. So it'll be interesting to see like who kind of fills the gap as those big time Big 12 powers. And I think KU can contend for the college football playoff next year. I think that's I'm going on record with that. So I think that may be a bit of a reach, but if it's expanded to 12 teams, KU ended up in the back half of the top 25 this year. They're getting quarterback Jalen Daniels back next year, fully healthy. They were returning a lot of their starters, even though they had a few transfers and a few graduates, but not very many compared to other schools. So we'll see how they do. But it's been really exciting to see it turn around these past couple of years.
Yeah, I don't even know how they're going to do it this year. I mean, traditionally you would have like, the Power Five would each get their champion, at least, smelling the top four like we saw this year. But really, if you look at what we had our final four team tournament, it was really the future SEC against the Big Ten, the two mega conferences and two future Big Ten teams playing. Duking it out too. So That's, I mean, it's going to be interesting, I think. But you still have the Big 12 definitely has some great teams, and ACC still has some great teams, and some of the smaller conferences are still competitive. With the Mountain West with Boise States, and they're always tough, and some of these things. So it should be kind of an interesting atmosphere. And I don't know how the invites are going to go out, and I think that might be kind of an interesting thing. And I'm sure everybody will be complaining and moaning the way they have that too, like we did when there was only two teams going to a national title game. And I can remember a day when you didn't have a national championship game. It was, hey, this team, number one Nebraska played, number 16 somebody else in the, Orange Bowl, and while the Rose Bowl has the number two team going on, and the one's hoping the other one loses, but they never got to face each other. So I think it's all good, and I think this is the path where college football probably should have been at 50 years ago, of having a dozen teams. I think that's a good number, and I'm excited to that. I don't know if I'm so excited about the super conferences. I'm a
I know.
traditionalist. I liked how you had, that one year the Pac-10 was the, or Pac-12 was the tough tops, and next year it's the ACC, then it was the SEC, then it was the Big Ten. I liked how it, moved around, the power shifted. These last few years with it sort of being one or two conferences, dominating, it's not as fun, I don't think.
Yeah, and it doesn't make as much sense geographically now that they've realigned, and now some of the West Coast schools are in the Big Ten with all the upper Midwest schools, and it doesn't make a ton of sense geographically, and that's going to hurt like student athlete well-being, I think, if they're traveling all over the place to play these sporting events.
Yeah, and the transfer portal too, I think, is, I mean, it's great for the players and the NIL contracts or anything, good for them. But again, as a traditionalist, I think it's kind of tainted the game a little bit and made it more like the professional game. And that's what was nice about it. It was a pure a brand of football. I mean, I was a high school football official for 27 years, and that's the purest form of the game of football, because these kids, it's just all academia and the love of playing a game. College football, you're getting these big time scholarships, and these behind the scenes kickbacks that nobody's supposed to know about, which we all know are probably happening. But now it's all out in the open, and they're making a living at it. These kids are becoming millionaires with this NIL before they even become professional. And I don't know if that's if I mean, I like it for the opportunity of the kids, because they work hard and they're the ones that make the program. Why should the colleges have be making all the money and then charging an exorbitant tuition on top of it too? But I just something you lose a little bit of something from the game, I feel, I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely different. Not even how it grew up in my lifetime, let alone folks that are older and know what it was like when there wasn't a national championship game, and like you were saying. So it's definitely different, and we'll see how it shakes out. But like the loss of the emphasis on the student athlete and it being more about the money now, I do agree with you that the student athlete should be compensated because they're the one bringing in the revenue to the schools. But the conferences changing alignments and the schools moving all over the place, it's all money driven and kind of media rights driven anyway, which is not what the fans care about either. So
Yeah, I think that NIL went a totally different direction than I pictured. When they were saying they were going to pay the students, I'm like, okay, here you give, maybe, these top athletes, give them like 20 grand or something to, so they can live, want to buy a pizza or whatever. These kids are working out
they can
all
buy a
the
lot of
time.
pizzas now.
But I had no idea that, like, who's the girl that's the gymnast from LSU? She's, an influencer on social media now, making millions and getting commercials on national television. I'm like, going, my God, that's, I mean, great opportunity for these kids, but, is that going to ruin them for their education that they're getting to, want to be a nurse or, an engineer or anything like that? Is that going to ruin them from doing that? And, what's going to happen that we might lose some of these great, scholars that, could really be doing something to help us in society. But oh well, that's a different subject, I guess. But hey, Andrew, we really appreciate you coming on here, and I want to ask you one last favor here. Now, with your extensive knowledge of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, we'll just stick to the Pro Football Hall of Fame here. Now, let's say you we're talking to somebody out in the listenership that's going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame for the first time this in 2024. And let's exclude the bus. We already talked about that a little bit. Okay. What's one item that is a must see that maybe it's not, like the Hopmobile when you walk in, a big attraction you can see, but something you could easily miss because there's so many nooks and crannies and it's kind of some odd shaped rooms like we discussed. But what's one item that folks got to see and appreciate that tells the legacy of the game of football?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly where it is, but it's on the second floor rotunda as you're going through the timeline on the first level. The second level is kind of more of these spotlights about like dynasties and famous plays and innovations in the game. And there's this gray metal panel in one of the cases on the exterior wall. And it looks very just unnoticeable at first, but it tells a really neat story where it's actually the elevator panel from Three Rivers Stadium that Art Rooney, the owner of the Steelers, was in the elevator when the Immaculate Reception happened. And so they've preserved, I don't know how it ended up at the Hall of Fame or how that process happened for acquisition, but it's on display now where Art Rooney, the owner of the Steelers, was getting ready to kind of console his team after this loss to the Raiders in the playoff game. And he got out of the elevator and it was like pandemonium where Franco Harris had caught the pass from Terry Bradshaw and scored to win the game, known as the Immaculate Reception. And so it was kind of this pandemonium that Art Rooney found himself in. And they've obviously made that a really famous play. It kind of kicked off the Steelers run, as you well know. And they've preserved that at the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a really neat artifact that I think people definitely know about the Immaculate Reception, but the kind of object that represents it, one of several at the Hall of Fame, is the elevator panel, which I think is pretty unique.
Yeah, it's I've enjoyed that myself. Of course, you know, that play sort of kicked off my fandom too in 1972. Yeah. You know, that's kicked off me and ignited the Steelers from, you know, a terrible team to a dynasty. So it was great. But I think one of my favorite things is I can't remember. I know it's on the first floor, but I love seeing they have, I think it's Ernie Nevers' Duluth Eskimos trunk. And yes. I just find that so fascinating. I could just sit there and stare at that thing for hours because it's just so cool. It's just a simple trunk, but they have the painted, the logo, you know, the simple logo that's probably not politically correct anymore. I know the Canadian Football League team had to change their name from the Eskimos, but just in the story of the Duluth Eskimos, you know, having very few home games and this guy that was probably would have been a superstar had not a guy named Red Grange been coming out of college at the same time that year. And guys like the Four Horsemen, it was, you know, 1924 was an amazing college football year. But I find that fascinating, that trunk. And I just love that whole little area there of those older teams that are defunct now. I think that's kind of a cool place of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So Andrew, we really appreciate you coming on here, sharing, your passion for the sport, sharing, these, you know, museum, thoughts and travels and stories. And, and why don't you give us the name of your podcast again, where people can listen to you and, you know, what days you come out with new episodes.
Yeah. So my podcast is called Hallowed Ground, the Sports Museum Podcast. It can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you listen. I am about to release the third season of episodes. The seasons don't really mean anything. It's just I have a break sometimes and then I kind of catch up on interviewing people and then I'll be releasing some episodes very soon. First few ones are going to feature some colleagues from the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So be sure to check those out and there'll be more coming this spring and beyond. So I'm excited to continue the podcast as I enter the third year of it. And I appreciate you having me on, Darren. This was a lot of fun to talk football and talk museums and definitely feel like it's something that matches my interests very well, my academic interest with my sports fandom and kind of all coming together now in my degree and then as I graduate here into a career. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we wish you luck on your endeavors here and your graduation. Congratulations on that again. And, you're always invited here to be a guest. And, talked about a little bit too. Maybe we can have you on the Sports Jersey podcast too to talk about maybe some of the great athletes and their jerseys and some of those mementos you've seen in some of the museums too. So thanks a lot for joining us, and good luck in your future.
Yeah, thank you, Darren.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.